there. This is Ralph Hermit Winterode II with the Ralph Winterode Show, Truth Seeker of the Far North. Another beautiful day in Alaska. Snow's gone. Sun is shining. Warm outside. Birds are chirping. The federales are chasing our state legislators, putting some of those, or indicting some of them. So far, we've got four representatives out of the legislature, one sitting and three that just left. And Senator Tenet Stevens, our U.S. Senator, his son Ben Stevens is on the list. He's no longer there. He was the president, but it looks like he's going to be indicted. And we've had Vico, the president and vice president, Bill Allen and Smith, have been indicted and pled guilty of all sorts of illegal actions, including bribing our senators and representatives. Of course, Ben Stevens, he hasn't been indicted yet, so we have to presume he's innocent until proven guilty or until at least indicted and gets before a jury. But he's the one that seemed to have the knack of it. He got in there for several hundred thousand dollars. Some of the other ones, like Vic Coring, he sold out pretty cheap, according to the indictment documents anyway, a couple thousand dollars. So it's amazing what people will do, but I don't know. We're cleaning the house down there. As far as I'm concerned, we could probably 95% of them got their hands in something illegal. It's too bad we can't get more indictments, but Webb Shea was on the, he's an ex-federal prosecutor. He was on the talk show local up here, and he's been working with Governor Sarah Palin, and he stated that our troopers are just as bad as the, they're full of corruption, and that the prosecutory side of Alaska, which I can confirm that, the troopers and the prosecutory side are full of corruption. So hopefully we'll see some of that go, but you never know. I don't know. It's, according to him, this may lead back to Washington, D.C., and, of course, that might get some of our sitting senators or Frank Murkowski, the senator that left to become governor and then couldn't get reelected because he tried to shove the natural gas pipeline down the throats of the people of Alaska. And some of the registered voters chose not to go that way. Anyway, today we're going to have a guest here, Tom Eidelman. He is a ex-Vietnam vet. I don't say ex, I guess he's a Vietnam vet, and I've got him on the show today. And are you there, Tom? Hello, Tom. Are you there yet? No, I can't hear you. I can't hear Tom yet. So we'll see what happened to Tom here. I'm not sure what happened to Tom. He should be calling in on the show. Until Tom shows up here, a couple of other interesting things. This melamine that they've added to this wheat glutenate for, I saw that was in the paper today, and it's amazing how they've added this, melamine for, to make it look like it had more protein that they brought in from China. And it's amazing, absolutely astounding, these news articles, when you read these news articles, how devoid of any actual facts that there are in these news articles. They stated that now they've expanded it not only to, was it fed to chickens? Of course, they said there was no known chickens that had died from it. Of course, they've never tested for it. They stated that they didn't think that the concentrations were low enough to be a problem in the meat, but of course they don't say, well, we tested the meat of the chicken and it's this amount. And today they were in the paper, they were talking about that they were feeding it to these fish farms where they do all the salmon and all these different raising them off of the coast, and they haven't done any tests there either. We're going to break and Tom on.
Wow. That coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific. And it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the Task Force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
Okay. Yeah, hi. Lost the connection there for a minute there. This is Ralph Winterode, and got a guest on today, Eidelman. And he was in the Vietnam War. And welcome to the show, Tom.
Well, hello there, everybody.
When did you go in the service to go over to Vietnam?
Well, I was drafted in August of 1969. And I went to Vietnam in January of 1970.
So you had about a year's training or something over in this country before you went over there?
Well, not a year. I got put in the infantry, so basically I had to go through the boot camp twice.
Mm-hmm.
Went through 9 weeks of basic, and then They sent me to Fort Polk, Louisiana, and I had to do it again.
The exact same training?
Pretty much, except for learning a few new weapons.
What sort of a job did you have when you went to Vietnam?
Well, I was in a mechanized infantry unit, and I ended up being a combat marksman, so to speak. In other words, I was a sniper after a while, and the reason I chose to do that is because when I first got there, they handed me an old worn-out M16 that was just a pile of junk. You could barely see a pinhole through the barrel. So they had an opening for sniper school, and I volunteered for that. And I went to that, and they gave me a brand-new rifle, so I felt a little better then, a little safer. And I thought, well, you know, if I can keep the enemy at bay a little further from me and my friends, then we'd be safer. Some guys mistook it and misunderstood and thought that I was, you know, bloodthirsty or something, but I didn't do it for that reason. I did it to help protect us.
What kind of weapon did you have when you got a new one? Was it an M1 or were you in when they had M14s or whatever that was?
Well, it was an Accurized National Match M14. It had a starlight scope and a day scope, so it made me feel a lot better so you could get up and take a look around at night and see what's out there.
Mm-hmm. So did you end up sitting out there as a sniper then and watching what was going on to protect troops, or what's a sniper do there?
Well, they just send me out with the ambush patrol. There'd be about 7 or 8 of us. And if we saw something, we'd deal with it. If not, come back the next morning.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't any specific, usually there wasn't any specific mission for based on my abilities.
Uh-huh.
It was just another means of taking care of the enemy.
What were you looking for when you went out? What were the rules of engagement? Could you identify the enemy? How do you identify the enemy? Were they dressed up or?
Well, the Viet Cong wore civilian clothes, but if they're carrying weapons and they're out there in the middle of the night, you know, they're not your guys.
Uh-huh.
If they're carrying AKs and all that stuff, you know.
Uh-huh. So did the rules of engagement allow you to engage them if you saw them with a weapon, or how did that work?
Well, normally, yes, but one time we moved into an area where they didn't allow that. They told us to stand down even if we recognized enemy troops in uniforms and weapons. So that was kind of a shocker. Still to this day, I don't know why they did that.
Why? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you identify the enemy, unless you don't want them to know you're there, why wouldn't you engage the enemy?
Beats me, unless they didn't want us to win or something.
Did you think that was maybe the goal of our country over there? They really didn't want us to win?
I think that had something to do with it, because it drug out for what, 10 years or more? I was there in the midpoint. It really got started good in 65. I think we first sent troops there in 63. Not sure exactly. And it was all over with in 75. So we fought for 10 years. For what?
What part of Vietnam are you in?
Well, I was in an area near a city called Tay Ninh. And there was the division headquarters, the 25th Division headquarters, was in Cu Chi, kind of the south central area, towards the eastern border, or western border, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. So what was the goal there of the division? Was it to conquer land or hold land, or what was the, did you get a specific idea of what the goal was to be there?
No, they didn't really give us one. They just sent us out on patrol and sent us out on ambush, at least 2 squads every night, just looking for whoever we might encounter.
And so if you encountered them, then you engaged them?
Yes, and towards the latter third of the year, we were sent, I don't remember exactly the month we were there, but we were sent into Cambodia. And that was the, our unit was part of it, our battalion. Our battalion actually was based originally from Fort Rich, Alaska, near Anchorage. and they were attached to the 25th Division. And we were sent into Cambodia on a mission to, well, who knows what, but there was a huge headquarters over there that was for the North Vietnamese Army that was set up in a French-owned rubber plantation. And it was all bombed out. It was a very luxurious place at one time. They had their own diesel-electric power plants, just like a small city would have. But all the houses and the main mansion was just bombed out. And the main mansion was a pretty strong building because it took a direct hit from a, 250 or 500-pound bomb, and it didn't completely destroy it.
Were we supposed to be in Cambodia?
Well, I don't know. You know, that's what the Kent State protest was about. And when we found out about that, when we were over there, it was just absolutely stunning that people would get, you know, they'd open up and shoot students because they didn't like where we were being sent.
Uh-huh.
And it was just an absolute mind bender.
Did most of the troops over there support the war after they got there?
No. They knew it was everybody knew it was BS. There's a few guys that loved to fight for the sake of fighting. I went to some in-country training once, and there was a guy there who had formerly been a mercenary in Africa, and he just relished the idea how they used to chop ears off the enemy and keep them on a ring and whatever. You know, they did that in Vietnam, too. Then they made him quit doing that before I got there. There was a few nutcases like that, and he just loved it. He loved the engagement, and he loved the hunt, but that was the only purpose for him, and that's all he needed. That's all he
so
wanted.
So why didn't most of the troops support what's going on? I mean, they're there, so...
Well, because we couldn't see any purpose for being there. Primarily because the people we were trying to help wouldn't fight to defend themselves. And we went out on missions several times, and we'd bring a few South Vietnamese regular army with us. And the first thing you do is hide all your cameras because they would steal your stuff that's valuable if they could. And we were on patrol on our mechanized, on our armored personnel carriers, we called them tracks, and we went out through a rubber plantation one day, and Viet Cong or somebody took some shots at us, and you hear the bullets crack overhead, and we all bailed off the tracks, and the South Vietnamese regulars took off to the rear about 300 or 400 yards, and they waited till we get all quiet, and then you see them peeking around the trees coming back up there to see if we're still there or not. So when you see that a couple of times, you know it's just all but done. So, how can you, excuse me, how can you fight for a country that won't fight for itself? So the whole thing was
amazing.
It was just a joke.
So really, you didn't have any, what was lacking was you didn't have any clear objectives of conquering land or anything, and the people of South Vietnam, at least the ones you were around in the service, they really didn't want to help fight. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly it. Well, everybody saw what happened on TV in 1975 when we pulled out. We left all the best equipment there for them. The North Vietnamese were so dedicated to the fight that they would walk to North Vietnam and put a 122-millimeter rocket on their back and walk all the way to South Vietnam and shoot it at us and then turn around and walk back and get another one. And the South Vietnamese regulars had airplanes and tanks and all the same stuff we did, but they wouldn't fight. I don't understand that to this day. So everybody saw on national television what happened in 1975 when they were crashing their helicopters on our ship and they're all running like rats off a sinking ship when the North Vietnamese rolled into Saigon. So, you know, it was just a huge waste of our lives and money, and it split the country down the middle, and there was a lot of other things that went on there, too, that were really...
Thank you. Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously, live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow. I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
Hey, this is Ralph Winterode, and we're back from break, and I have Tom on, the Vietnam vet. And what was the paper in Congress to that? You know, I don't recall back then. What were they doing? Were they supporting the war, or were they like to say, we want you to come home when the war is lost? Or what do you recall about that?
Well, they just kept throwing money at it. They didn't really tell us much. To my overall feeling, they put us in harm's way, and then they'd pull us out, and then put us back in harm's way. And their intent was just to prolong it for whatever reason, and their intent was not to win it. And I'll give an example. When we were in the Cambodian mission there, we stumbled onto the outer perimeters of the encampment that had been in that rubber plantation. That was their command post for the North Vietnamese Army for all of South Vietnam. We were on the edge of it. And we went down this little road 3 days in a row. And that's a cardinal rule you don't ever do. They beat that into us all the time. You never go down the same road the same time of day repeatedly. Never do it. They sent us down the road the first day, and there's a little Cambodian village at the end of the road. And the villagers were real friendly towards us, and, you know, they were a little nervous and stuff. And we were walking around there looking around, and I pointed out something to some guys, you know, in my unit. I said, look at those tank tracks in the ground there. That's not our tread pattern. And I think what it was, there was a Russian tank around there somewhere, but we never saw it. But it doggone sure wasn't ours. But nobody wanted to listen, so I just dropped it. So we pulled out of there that day, and it was a beautiful blue sky day, and they sent us in there the next day. So we're heading down the road, and the villagers are all leaving. They got their ox carts loaded up, and they're leaving. And we're going, uh-oh. But they ordered us in there. The battalion commander, his name was, what was it, Lieutenant Colonel Bradford or Bradley or something. he never come to talk to us unless he wanted to order us to do something. So we never saw much of him. And so we went down there, and the village was empty. So we pulled out that day. Next day, same scenario. They sent us down there again. And we're pretty tense by then. And we figured that, I wouldn't be here were it not for a fellow named Denny Velusic, and he saved a lot of us that day at the cost of his own life. And his name is on the black wall there in the Capitol. But I was walking with Point that day. I would have been one of the first ones to the kill zone. And he was back there a ways, and he heard something in the bush, in the brush. It was there a couple of Vietnamese, and they were, that was their forward observers. Relaying where our position was. And I saw down the road there in the heat waves coming off the road, I thought I saw a couple of people dash across the road. And I thought, boy, this is not good. And about that time, then I heard some shooting behind us, so we stopped. And we went back there, and Denny had heard him, and he jumped in the brush, which is like less than 10 feet from the road, and they shot him and took his weapon and took off in the brush. So we stopped, and we went in sideways to the road, back in the brush, trying to find the guys that, you know, that got our friend. And we come across a footpath that was beat down clay, and it was about 8 feet wide or 10, and it had so much traffic on it you couldn't discern one footprint from another. And we, for some reason, they had sent a couple of CID guys, or whatever they call them, the intelligence people, with us that day, and we found a pair of wires along the trail. It was a phone line. I'd never seen such a thing. The Viet Cong didn't have that. They'd communicate by signal shots once in a while. But they sure as heck didn't have radios or phones. So they put a recorder on that and got some interesting information. But anyway, we got ambushed there, and that was very nearly where I lost my life. We walked back in there, and then a machine gun opened up on us, and it was only about probably 15, 20 yards away. You could see the brush was so thick you could see the leaves flapping from the muzzle blast. And just about the time, I mean, you can't, when that happens, it's everything turns to slow motion because your mind is going so fast. And it's just about the time I hit the ground, and I couldn't get there fast enough. My mind was going so fast. It just almost like you're swimming down. You're trying to make yourself get down faster even. And as soon as I hit the ground, I saw the brush, you know, the sticks and stuff coming apart about 3 feet above me or less. So I started pouring fire in there where I could see the muzzle blast from the machine gun. And then they were blowing off claymore mines on us. And luck would have it, we had two guys wounded. They hit the top of one of our rigs with a little mortar, 60 millimeter or something. And he got some shrapnel, and the point guy took a bullet through the muscle right above his collarbone, right in his upper shoulder there, and that was it. So there was just a absolute roar, and then all of a sudden it got quiet, and that's when you get scared. You could hear sticks falling down in the brush, and there was absolute silence. And so it takes a good deal of willpower to get yourself to get up off the ground and get out of there, but so we did. I don't know if I got the guy with the machine gun or what, but we got out of there, and we got back to base camp. And
okay, we'll pick up right after the break here, Tom, because I've got some questions here. I've been listening to your story here because I got some interesting questions for the long break, and we'll be back here in a minute or two.
Yeah. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately one in four families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
A message for all homeowners and prospective homeowners out there. If you reside in Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, California, or Utah, we can help you with financing the purchase of a new home or refinancing your existing mortgage. We now have a wide array of lenders for your purchase or refinancing needs. If you are looking for a cash-out refinance, from an adjustable to a fixed-rate loan, paying down credit card debt, consolidating installment or other debt, or been wanting to invest in the safe haven of gold in the silver market, but you've been sitting on the fence waiting for the right time. Whatever your reason, give RBN a call and ask to talk to our mortgage professional. He can help you find a plan that fits your needs while he walks you through the process very simply and easily. You couldn't choose a better time to pay down debt or purchase gold and silver. And not only do you accomplish your goal, but you also help to support RBN in continuing to voice the truth. Don't wait any longer. Call us now at 1-800-724-2719. Again, that's 1-800-724-2719.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Well, hello. This is Ralph, and I have a guest, Tom, a Vietnam veteran. And you were just explaining here how you walked into, basically, I can't imagine, why would you walk down to the same village? What's the goal? And walk back? Are you sitting ducks or what?
Well, basically, we were never told the exact reason, or at least I didn't hear why we were going down there. We were just patrolling. But after the ambush, we got out of there, and we went back to our base camp, and found out the next day or so that they analyzed the recordings they got off of that phone line, and it was, we had penetrated into the first bunker line of the North Vietnamese headquarters, Cosvin headquarters, for their command post for all of South Vietnam. But the thing that really made me believe that they didn't want to win the war was that particular thing that happened next. They knew what they had, and the Vietnamese, the North Vietnamese, had set up out in the jungle, so there was no buildings around, there was nobody's houses or city to blow up. And they sent two phantoms through there and dropped two bombs, boom, boom, and then sent us in there again on the backside. And being a sniper, I had the option of staying back with the rigs or going in, and I said, ah, hell, this is just a bunch of crap. So I stayed back there, and one of my friends shot a North Vietnamese and took his weapon. but there wasn't much action that day. The thing that amazes me is why didn't they just saturation bomb that whole area? They could have knocked out their whole command post, which would have shut down their operations pretty much, but they chose not to, and they knew exactly what they had. Why wouldn't they take it out?
So all they did was give them an alert that you would be coming.
Yeah, they just dropped a couple bombs, and boom, boom, that's we're done, we're out of here, more or less. And I didn't do anything.
How can you fight a war if you don't believe in the war? I mean, if you can see that, I was in the military, but I never saw any action like that. But how can you, my idea of a war is you go in there to capture the enemy, destroy the enemy, and capture land.
Well, basically, that would seem true, but that's not the way they ran the thing. I'll give you another example. Excuse me. There was a, out near Tainan City, there was it was a flat plain. It was nothing but rice paddies for miles. You couldn't see any hills for miles, but out there in the middle of all these rice paddies was a mountain that stuck up out of the middle like it's just sticking up out of the plains. It was an interesting-looking thing, and they called it Nui Ba Den. They called it the Black Virgin Mountain. And they wouldn't let us bomb the whole thing, you know, just blow the crap out of it, because there was a Buddhist pagoda up on the side of it somewhere, some old, old religious site, and they wouldn't let us blow it up because of that. And this mountain was like an anthill. We had a radio group, a signal outfit on the top, and they got infiltrated regularly by being tunneled into from the bottom. The Vietnamese owned the rest from the top down. It was like an anthill. They had underground R&R centers. They even had underground POW compounds for our guys that they had captured. And we didn't ever figure out exactly how they supplied it, but we did learn that there was an underground river that ran right through there, so we think that's how they did it. But we were sent out on an operation near there. The main mountain was high, and then there was a saddle, and then there was a smaller hill. And in that saddle area between the two, there were some huge rocks, like big as houses. And they airlifted a group in there called the Wolfhounds, and those guys went up in there, and they let them out at the top, and they were supposed to patrol down through there, and they put us at the bottom for fire support. Does that sound logical? How in the heck do you protect your guys when they're walking down through it amongst the enemy, and you're sitting down there, and they're shooting at you, and you can't shoot to help anybody because our guys are in the line of fire. So what do you do? It was the dumbest thing. I thought it was incompetence at the time, but now I believe it was deliberate. And their guys had a E&E off the mountain, escape and evade, and that means everybody's for themselves. There's no command, no cohesion or anything. You're just make it down off of there on your own if you can. And I talked to a guy that made it down off of there, and he was laying on a stretcher. He got shot in the butt. And he said, yeah, we had the E&E off the mountain, and I was coming down through them rocks, and there's this, they call them gooks. I don't know if that's derogatory now.
That's fine.
That's what they call them. And he said one of them gooks opened a concrete door and shot me in the butt and slammed the door. That's how well fortified that thing was.
Well, I guess what I'm saying, or what you're telling me here, is we didn't go in to win the war. What in the world were we doing there then?
Well, you know, I've studied it, and that was my great awakening. Several years after I got out, I went to a John Birch meeting, of all things. And I don't know how legit they are nowadays, but I got a hold of a book written by a guy named Gary Allen called None Dare Call It Conspiracy. And I read that, and it just everything clicked into place. It was, it started to make sense. And it was dang sure deliberate. And I think it was done to weaken our country, and it worked. I'll give you another example. When we were there, it was common knowledge that that Air America, through the CIA, was bringing in drugs for the troops and having the Vietnamese sell it to them. And I remember the little Vietnamese kids along the road saying, hey, G.I., you want to buy some coke? Well, it wasn't coke. Cocaine's a hell of a lot less dangerous than heroin, but that's what they were selling. It was pure white, the purest heroin you could get. And it was cheap. And I knew of guys, I knew a guy that I went through basic with. I run into him by accident over there, and somehow or another he'd got mixed up with that stuff, and he was strung out bad. And there were guys that were reenlisting to stay there because if they came home to support the same habit, it had cost them, even back then, probably $1,000 a day. That's what they figured. That's what guys have told me. I don't know.
But, so didn't the higher-ups, didn't they know that all this drugs was going on?
I'm sure they had to, because the Air America was bringing it in. And we all knew that. It was common knowledge, but I've never met anybody until years later that verified that. And years later in Anchorage here, at a business meeting, I met a guy that worked for Air America in Vietnam. And I got him off to the side one time, and I had to find out. And I asked him point blank. I said, is that true? That was common knowledge among all of us. That Air America was bringing in heroin to the troops from the Golden Triangle. And he kind of hung his head, and he says, yeah, he says, I'm not proud of it, but that's actually the truth. That's what happened. And he was there, and he worked for him. So now I believe it even more.
Wow.
I think it was done to discredit us, and it was done to create another new criminal element, because a lot of those guys went home. They're addicted. How are they going to support their habit? Without, you know, at $1,000 a day or maybe even $500 a day. How do you support that without becoming a criminal? Start stealing stuff from people.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, did you have a welcoming committee when you came home from Vietnam?
No, not exactly. We were, I would say from what I saw, we were, at the very best, we were met with indifference. Oh, you're back, you know, like. There's a rock song, Pink Floyd did it, called Welcome to the Machine. And you hear the door slide open and you step out and people are clinking their drinks and laughing and talking, and it's just they don't even notice that you're there. And at the very worst, a lot of guys got spit on when they come home. I don't know how I'd be mentally if that would have happened to me. I was met with indifference, except for my family and friends. They were dang sure happy to see me. But we never got a ticker tape parade like the guys that fought Desert Storm. They fought for 10 days. We fought for 10 years. And they threw a big ticker tape parade down the middle of New York City for them when they come home. And that kind of rubbed me the wrong way a little, too. I'm sure it did other guys. But, I don't know. It's just, I think it was designed to split the country, and it worked. To weaken us a little bit. Another thing that most people don't know, and I don't know where I could find the statistics, but years ago, I saw where, at that time, and this is probably 15 years ago or more, where there's more Vietnam vets that killed themselves than was killed in the war. And at that time, the count was up to about 75,000. And I can sure understand why, but I'm just too stubborn, and I never got beat down to the point of doing that. But I could understand how some guys would.
What's the percentage, you think, of Vietnam, the people that got tangled up with drugs over there?
I don't know. A lot of us smoked weed. I did that, I'll admit it. But, you know, I don't know. As far as the hard stuff goes, that heroin, I stayed away from that. And there was some guys that were badgering me, and in my squad that got hooked up with it a little bit, and they kept hounding me to try it. And I finally said, okay, I tried it once, and never, ever again. The first thing that happened to me was I puked violently after about 5-10 minutes. And the next thing I saw, a green bush burning green flames about 30 feet away, 50 feet away maybe. And then the next thing that happened, it felt like this huge hand was wrapped around the top of my head, pushing me down. So I slid down off of where I was sitting and went and found my bunk, and that was it. I said, never, ever, ever again. I don't need that.
That's some good advice. Terrible stuff to screw your mind up. And I saw some of the people come back that I knew and that had been hooked on this stuff, and I didn't know how they got hooked on it, you know, what the deal is. But
well, the way they did it now, most guys snorted it like you would cocaine, I think. There wasn't a whole lot of needles to get a hold of. Some guys would get them from the medics, and I suppose there were guys shooting it, but everybody I knew out in the field were just snorting the stuff. It gets in your system just as good. And it was dangerous stuff.
Like why, something why would our bothers own me is I just can't imagine how somebody could be in the military, because like I say, I was in and we had the thing down there with Cuba and all that, you know, so there was no big deal about all that because nothing ever really happened out of it. But I can't imagine being in the military and not, first of all, determining that you're not there to win the war. And the second of all is to come back and, you know, there's an awful lot of people. I mean, I can remember, you know, they despised the war and despised the people that were in the military, and they had their lives out there, whether they wanted to be there or not.
Yeah, back in the day, we had three choices. If you pass your, if you flunk your physical, you're home free. But if you pass your physical, you had three choices. You go in and take your chances of getting killed, or you refuse to go and go to prison, or you go to Canada. And when I went in, there was no amnesty. That happened 6 years later.
Uh-huh.
So I very reluctantly went in. I didn't want to because I knew it was a crock of bull, because I've talked to a number of guys that come back there from there, from my hometown, and I knew well ahead of time what basically it was about. And they didn't send us there to win the war. Our main mission between all of us guys, it was kind of an unspoken code, was to help keep each other alive long enough to come home. That was our mission, and that's how we fought the war. Even the inner city black guys, we had some of them in our outfit, and normally there'd be a lot of friction, you know, if in a peaceful zone. They left us alone, and we left them alone, and we helped each other out when there was a firefight. So that was our mission, was to live and come home.
Well, that doesn't sound to me like any way to win a war. I mean, that's not the object of a war, is to go over there, and some of the things you're telling me, and you go forward and back. I mean, if you keep going to the same village, and I was on the other side, I can tell you what I'd be doing. I'd be setting out an ambush.
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, if you're dumb enough to keep coming back to the same village, I mean...
Well, that would just happen that one time in Cambodia, and they ordered us to go there. It came. That wasn't our choice.
You still there? Okay. Well, it looks like we lost Tom here. We'll have to get him to call back here again. We'll finish up the rest of the hour here. I don't know. I love my country, but I have no respect for the police state that we have today, because, you know, it's just like what we're doing over in Iraq. I mean, if we're there to win a war, we go to win a war. You define what the object is, and you go do it. And if you're not going to win the war, don't go there. Of course, we've got ourselves over in Iraq in the middle of a situation now where people have been fighting and don't like each other. So what's the real solution? And I can't believe that we would give a timetable. If you give a timetable to the other side, you might just well walk out tomorrow, because the bottom line is that's what's going to happen. They're going to sit and wait until the timetable. I don't know. It boggles my mind, the logic or the what's really going on. I mean, we get in the middle of these things and we don't want to win. Are you back yet, Tom?
I think so. You hear me?
Oh, okay, great. Well, tell me, did you see any Osage Orange while you were over there? That defoliation.
Agent Orange.
Yeah, Agent Orange. I'm sorry.
Well, I never got sprayed with it, but we went through areas that had been sprayed, and we were a little bit nervous about it. But it was all dried up and crispy, so I guess we really didn't get exposed too badly. But I saw areas that they sprayed it, and it kills everything, boy. Trees, whatever.
So did it help the war, or what was the purpose, you know, to really do anything?
I can't see how it helped the war at all. I mean, there's plenty of places to hide, no matter how you do that. Even mm-hmm. dead foliage will hide you.
Mm-hmm.
And they also had rigs they called Rome plows. They had big bulldozers with a blade that curved out so it would chop off trees, and they would get these dozers in a ring, and we pulled security for them several times. And boy, that was awful duty, because they'd stir up every kind of bug and critter you could think of, and they would start in a center and go around in a circle and just keep knocking trees down in a wider and wider arc.
Uh-huh.
And you wouldn't believe the bugs. I saw a walking stick come crawling up in the back of our track one time. We were sitting there taking a break.
Can you hold just a minute, Tom? We've got a caller here, Mike from Maryland, and we'll be going to break here. Mike, you want to come in? Are you there?
Yes. Can I talk
yeah,
now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, let me say, you know, I've got the greatest respect for the Vietnam veterans. I mean, you know, you don't take a back seat to anyone, especially considering the fact that, like you so plainly point out, they're getting stabbed in the back by their own government. And there's this one book that I think it was advertised in American Free Press by this Vietnam veteran called They Were Expendable or something like that.
I think I've heard of that, but I've never read it.
He was a special ops guy, and basically the government wanted him to assassinate, I think, Sihanouk, the leader of Cambodia, I believe.
Huh.
Okay, can I come back?
Just hold on the line there, and we'll be back in just a minute from break. We'll be back in just about a minute or two for the final segment.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously. Live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow. I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
Well, this is Ralph, and we're back from break, and have Mike here. You still there, Mike?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and got Tom on the line here, and you were talking about this book, and they were expendable. Did you read the book?
No, it sounded like it. You know, listen to alternative radio. there's so little time and so many books and so much good radio to listen to, but it's one that should be on the front burner. But the bottom line is that he wouldn't, him and his elite group, his A-team, and his he had like 100 elite, maybe Montagnard tribesmen or something like that, he would perform this black op for the government only if they would give him a freer hand in conducting the war. So they refused. You know, they wouldn't you know, let him, you know, fight a real war. And so then he wouldn't perform their black op operation. So the bottom line is the government sent this huge force after him and his Green Beret A team and tried to annihilate him and his group. They were unsuccessful. As a matter of fact, he won a court battle to get his book published. So this guy has got quite a fascinating story. He was in American Free Press, and he would make a good guest as well. But can I ask you one question? What's your email, Ralph? Because I want to ask you about, you know, becoming...
Sure. My email is Ralph, R-A-L-P-H, at, and it's a Latin word, J-U-S, and then it's bell, like you ring a bell, J-U-S-B-E-L-L-I.com.
Okay.
And I, go ahead.
Yeah, because I'm thinking about, I mean, how difficult is it to become a USA citizen? Because I'm listening to you, and you've got a fascinating show, and Desi Andrews, and how difficult, how necessary is it to become a USA citizen? And, you know, what are the pitfalls of it? Because, I mean, maybe I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
A show on citizenship here one of these days. I just haven't done one yet, but I'm going to devote the whole time to that, and I'm working on how to make legal and conclusive evidence of that particular issue because it's really important.
Because let me tell you, there's a website out there that says, he doesn't say you directly, but he says this whole thing is a patriot fraud. The fringe on the flag is a fraud. The idea that you can rescind your Social Security number is a fraud. The idea of the capital letters denoting you as a corporate citizen is a fraud. This individual who's at a website that's advertised on RBN Live, who is a part of that, says it's all patriot myth.
Yeah, I'm not aware of that. And kind of the agreement we have here, Republic Broadcasting, is we don't go after anybody else that's on the show. But send me an email. I'll take a look at it. And I do thank you for calling in. And by the way, were you in the service?
Yes, I was. I was drafted in 1972. To be honest with you, I hate to use the word hippie, but I had long hair and I drank a lot of beer and other things before I was drafted. Ironically enough, I protested against the war in Vietnam when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And I was against the war in Vietnam. I mean, I'm not a yes man. I'm straight up. You know, I was against the war. And I was thinking about going to Canada or Sweden. But I was drafted in October of 72, and I rolled the dice, and I realized the odds of me getting sent to Nam were pretty remote. Now, my older brother was in Nam in 1968, and when I told him I was protesting against the war, he said, great, right on, you know, maybe you might get me home sooner. Because, as you can well see, you know, this whole war was about making profits for the multinational corporations and military-industrial complex.
There was no war.
I have one thing to say, too. I've got long hair as well, but I wear it now not to be a hippie protester. I had long hair back in the 70s after I got back.
Sure.
But I wear it long now to commemorate our founders, guys like Patrick Henry, and that's who we need to join the fray now.
Sure, sure.
And I wear it to commemorate
them. Well, thanks for calling in, Mike. And, Tom, I appreciate you being on the show here and sharing some of your thoughts from somebody that was there and did it. Friday, we're going to have an attorney on, looks like on child custody out of Florida, so that should be an interesting. And we'll see you Friday. Oh.
A message.